turn with us to 1 Kings chapter 18. Let's kind of get back to speed to what's taking place here. For 3 years, over 3 years now, Elijah has been depending upon God for his substance. Remember, it told us in chapter 17, the ravens would bring him food. And then it would tell us that they would bring him not only meat, but bread in order to sustain Elijah this whole time. And then when that dried up, remember, God told him to go to a widow, and this widow would supply all of his needs. And so Elijah listens to God, and he goes, you know, to this widow, and she provides him with bread, and she provides him with substance and food. Now, this whole time, the nation of Israel is in a drought. They were without rain for 3.5 years. Now you need to understand that rain was a necessity in order to sustain life in the Middle East. And it's incredible because you realize that, you know, all these things are taking place and God's trying to get the attention of the people there in Israel. And then you realize that not only were they in a drought, but their lives were lacking. You'll see that in a second. And I was just pondering that whole thing because you realize that there's times in our own lives when you feel like there's a drought, like you're going through a dry time. When you really begin to say, you know what, what's going on? You feel really bummed out spiritually. You feel like you're in the dumps. And you try, you know, maybe if I read, maybe if I pray, maybe if I go to church, you know, that they'll have some kind of relief or there'll be some kind of refreshing take place. But you realize something here, man, that God had a purpose in what He was doing. He was trying to get the attention of the people. You see, they were worshiping the Baals. The word Baal means owner or Lord. And so they were worshiping this God who they had brought themselves under submission to, their Lord, their God, their Master, the one who they served. And what's incredible is that the God they were serving was accredited as the God of the weather. I like how Harper Bible Dictionary puts this. He said, the phenomena associated with thunderstorms were closely linked to Baal. Baal was said to appoint the seasons of rain. Clouds were thought to be part of his entourage. Lightning was his weapons, and it may have been his invention. That was their thoughts concerning Baal. They believed that Baal controlled the thunder, the rain, the clouds, everything. And yet for 3.5 years, the very God they were worshiping hadn't brought any rain, any thunder, any clouds. And it's kind of ironic that God dried up the very thing they were serving. And it's incredible because I think, you know, that same thing happens in our own lives. You see, we're trying to find happiness. We're trying to find contentment. We're trying to find satisfaction. And what ends up happening is that we end up still searching and never satisfied. That's what Luke in Luke 17:33 says this. He says, whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it or will save it. You see, what happens is that we're trying to find happiness and we begin to seek it from the things of this world. Through pleasure, sex, drugs, money, possessions. And we're trying to bring some kind of sense, we're trying to bring some kind of happiness, but what ends up happening is the very thing we're seeking to make us happy ends up leaving us dry, empty. And that's what was happening here. They were looking to be satisfied by worshiping Baal, thinking that they would have prosperity if the rains would come, the harvest would come. That would mean, you know, money, it would mean prosperity, it would mean all of the satisfaction of this world would be produced. And yet God dries up the very thing that they're trying to accomplish. Now, watch what happens as we begin chapter 18. It says, and it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah, in their third year, saying, "Go, present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the earth." Now, interesting to me, as you look at these verses, is that God desired to bring rain. You see, God held back the rain, and we'll see in a second why He held back the rain. But God held back the rain so that they would turn to God, so that they would eventually be truly satisfied, not a temporary satisfaction. And so God withheld this rain knowing that He would accomplish His purposes by doing so. And one of the things I realized is that God is more interested in your eternal state than He is your temporary comforts. You see, God's more concerned about you spiritually than He is about you physically. Because He sees eternally. And He wants to satisfy you. He wants to bring true refreshing to your life if you're willing to submit your life to Him and say, "God, not my will, but Your will be done." You see, that's what God's trying to accomplish. And it says that He tells Elijah, "Elijah, I want you to go and stand before Ahab, and I'm going to send rain on the earth." Jesus said this in John 4:10 as He was talking to a woman at the well. He says, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would ask Him and He would give you living water." You see, God's able to give you, you see, not just a temporary satisfaction, but an eternal satisfaction. I want to give you living water that doesn't dry up, not just something that you have to continue to replenish, but something that's going to satisfy you, not just on the temporary, but for eternity. You see, that's God's heart. And as God's coming to Elijah, He says, "Elijah, I want you to do something. I want you to go out and I want you to go and talk to Ahab." Now remember this whole time, Elijah's been provided for. He's been satisfied. 3.5 years, no rain. There's been, you know, a famine in the whole land. And yet God provided for Elijah this whole time. And the rest of the nation is in drought. They're suffering. And you see what the difference is? It's the life of obedience, man. You see, Elijah was willing to obey God. Remember, God says, "Elijah, I want you to go talk to Ahab and tell him there's not going to be any rain until I say." And Elijah does exactly what God says, tells him to do. And as he goes out, God provides for him and takes care of him and guides him and directs him his whole life. You see, the difference between being satisfied and not being satisfied is really a difference between obedience and disobedience. Whether you're going to have satisfaction. Whether you're going to be content. Whether you're going to really have the heart of God. And so you notice here that as Elijah's there, watch what happens. Verse 2 now. "So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab, and there was a severe famine in Samaria. And Ahab had called Obadiah, who was in charge of his house." Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly, and so it was when Jezebel massacred the prophets of the Lord that Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and had hidden them, 50 to a cave, and had fed them with bread and water. And Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go into the land, to all the springs of water, and to all the brooks. Perhaps we may find grass to keep the horses and the mules alive, so that we will not have to kill any livestock." So they divided the land between them to explore it. Ahab went one way by himself, and Obadiah went another way by himself. Now as Obadiah was on his way, suddenly Elijah met him, and he recognized him, and he fell on his face, and he said, "Is that you, my lord Elijah?" And he answered, "It is I. Go tell your master Elijah's here." Now, we encounter this man by the name of Obadiah. The word Obadiah means servant of the Lord. And he was serving the Lord right where he was. He was still working for Ahab. He was Ahab's right-hand man. But in this whole situation, you see, Obadiah had hidden 100 prophets of the Lord. And he would sneak out to them every day, food, bread.
he would sneak out water. I mean, that wasn't a small task. Can you imagine feeding 100 people when there's a drought and there's a famine? And so, you know, this guy, you know, really was committed and he was faithful to God. And so Obadiah is there. He's, you know, working for in the midst of an ungodly king. And yet he himself was continuing to serve God. And I think that's important, man. You see, we're, you know, in the midst of an ungodly nation, you can still be a godly person. You know, it was incredible. You know, when we were in Bangkok this the last night we were coming home, and we're at the hotel in Bangkok, and you know, me and my, and Jimmy were rooming together, Jimmy Orate, and we went to eat dinner there at the hotel. He said, you know, it's late, man. We just want to get to bed. We got to get up early. We're just going to eat here. But a group of the pastors got together and said, you know what? Let's go down the street. Let's go find some food here. Let's go see what Bangkok's all about. So they went down into, you know, the street, and the concierge of the hotel says, hey, what are you guys looking for? What do you want? He said, well, we're just looking for something to eat. He pulls out a book and he starts showing them pictures of, you know, immoral things. You know, boy, boy, girl, girl, child, boy, child, girl. And they, you know, they were just shocked. I mean, they said, you know, hey, no, we don't have that. And they took off. They walked outside and there was, you know, 10 other guys waiting there with their books. And they, and you know, you realize, you know what? Is that, in, you know, I look at America and, I, you know, after going to a place like that, you go, man, we're not that bad. I mean, you know, you get your different perspective. But what you realize this is that we're still living in a society where, you know, there's a lot of immorality. And it's in the pressures and the influence that we're living under. You know what? It's hard to be godly in that environment. When your friends, you know, and your co-workers and people that you're talking to, that, you know, they're all telling dirty jokes and they're all mocking and they're all, you know, talking about what they did last weekend. And then, you know, as a Christian, you're standing there going, you know what? I still need to have a witness and have integrity and be a man of God or a woman of God in whatever environment that God has placed me in. And that's what Ahab was at, man. He was, I mean, not Ahab, but Obadiah, in the midst of this ungodly nation, he was still serving God, even putting his life on the line. Think about that. Because if they would have caught him feeding these 100 prophets, they would have killed him. And he knew it. But he was willing to lay down his life for righteousness. And so we see Obadiah, as he's there, he's hiding them, and then Elijah comes to him and he says, hey, I want you to go talk to Ahab, tell him I'm here. Now look at verse 8 with me. I'm sorry. Verse 9. And he said, have I sinned that you are delivering your servant into the hands of Ahab to kill me? As the Lord your God lives, there's no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to hunt for you. And when they said he's not here, he took an oath from the kingdom or nation that they could not find you. And now you say, go tell your master Elijah's here, and it shall come to pass as soon as I'm gone from you that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you to a place I did not know. So when I go and tell Ahab and he cannot find you, he will kill me. But I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Was it not reported to my Lord that I did what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, how I hid 100 men of the Lord's prophets, 50 to a cave, and fed them with bread and with water? And now you say, go tell your master Elijah's here, he'll kill me. And Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand, I will surely present myself to him today. And I love, you know, his response. He said, what are you trying to do? Kill me? You know, if I go tell Ahab that I've seen Elijah, and then by the time I go down there, the Lord's going to pick you up, take you somewhere else, and we'll never find you, and they're going to be mad at me. I know how you work, Elijah. God's with you, and He's going to protect you. And so Elijah promises today, man, I'll be here. I'll be waiting for Ahab, man. I want to talk to him. And so he goes, he finds Ahab, and it says, verse 17. He says, and it happened when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said to him, is that you, O troubler of Israel? What a way to greet Elijah, huh? Elijah, this is all your fault. These 3.5 years of famine, you know what? It's all because of you. You're the one who's been troubling Israel. And you know what you find, guys, is when you're living in a society that's politically correct, the one who exposes the problem is the one who's blamed for the problem. I don't know if you've noticed that, man, but we live in a society when if you're the one who brings to light sin, or you're the one who confronts something that's wrong, then you're the one who gets blamed. And that's what happens with Elijah. He comes in, he says, "Hey, Elijah, this is your fault." And now watch what Elijah says to him. He says, verse 18, "And he answered, 'I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, in that you've forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals.'" Hey, yeah, let me tell you the problem, man. You know what the problem is? Is that you've forsaken God. You've turned your back on the commandments of the Lord. And as a result of that, this is what's happened. So don't blame me, man. This is your own fault. You know what? That's heavy, guys. Because you realize something is that God allowed this to happen because He loves His people. God allowed this kind of event to take place because God was trying to get the attention of a nation. And He says, because you've forsaken the Lord, man, God's allowed this to happen. And He says, you've been serving the Baals all this time. And then watch what He says, verse 19. He says, "Now therefore, send and gather all of Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 450 prophets of Baal, the 400 prophets of Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab went, and he sent for all the children of Israel, and gathered the prophets together on Mount Carmel. Now, you gotta love the boldness of Elijah. He says, "Let's do this, man. You don't believe me, it's my fault. You think it's my fault? I believe it's your fault." He says, "Let's have a duel. You get your 450 prophets and you get the other 400 prophets of Asherah." And he says, "I'll meet you on Mount Carmel and it'll be, you know, we'll see whose God is really in control." And so they gather all the people together. And before they go for this duel, for this competition that Elijah is going to challenge him to, Elijah addresses the people. And I think this is an amazing address. Because he's going to share the heart of God. And I think it's something that we can really learn from, guys. Watch what he says. "Elijah came to all the people," as they're all gathered there. Now remember, they've been looking for Elijah for 3.5 years now. And then Ahab goes back and he says, "Hey, Elijah's here. He wants everyone down there, and we're going to, you know, something's going to take place." And so all the people start gathering around. The prophets of Baal, the prophets of Asherah start to show up. And Elijah said to the people, watch this, "How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow Him. But if Baal, follow him." And the people answered him not a word. You know, Elijah stands up and he tells them, "Guys, you know what? You can't play games with God. Who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve the Baals? Is that going to be your Lord? Or are you going to serve God? Is He going to be your Lord?" He said, "But you can't choose both. It's one or the other. Either serve the Lord or serve the Baals, but don't sit here and play games with God." You see, we've heard those words before, haven't we? Remember Joshua in Joshua 24:15? He said, "If it seems evil for you to serve the Lord, choose yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served there on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." He says, take a pick, man. Make a choice. You want to serve the Baals, then go out and keep serving the Baals. You want to serve the Lord, then serve the Lord. But don't falter between two opinions. Don't play, teeter-totter with God. Don't just say, "Well, you know, I want to serve the Lord today, but tomorrow I'm going to serve my flesh. Then tomorrow I want to serve the Lord." Don't keep playing games with God. Don't try to satisfy your flesh. Don't try to satisfy your desires and your longings and then come and call yourself a believer. And God, you know, he was very upfront with them. Now, Jesus, in the book of Revelation, we'll be studying that this, not this week, but a couple of weeks on Sunday night, and Jesus said this to one of the churches. He says, I know your works, that you're neither cold nor you're hot. I would wish you were cold or hot, so then because you're lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Jesus says the very same thing. He says, you know what, either be cold or be hot, but don't sit in the middle. He says, because if you do, I'll spit you out like a loogie. That's what he says. You see, it's one or the other. And Jesus said, you know what? I'll vomit you, man. If you're just going to sit there, you're going to be cold. You're going to be hot. I mean, you never imagine when you get, have you ever done that? Get a cup of coffee and you expect it to be hot and it's cold. It's like, ugh. And Jesus says, you know what? It's either one or the other, man. You can't live a life, because I think and I truly believe that that's the most miserable life you can live. To know the truth and not obey it, man. See, I remember when I first got saved. I remember, you know, when I had just given my life to the Lord, and I thought, you know what? I can, you know, I'm going to go to the bars, but I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to go dance. I like dancing. And you justify it, and oh, that's all right. I just, you know, just going to dance, just purely dance. And you get over there, and you feel like a, you know, like a fish out of water. You're going, what am I doing here? I don't feel comfortable here, man. I this isn't where I belong. And you know, even though I wasn't going to go get stoned, I wasn't going to get drunk, but I was in an environment where, you know, there was no godly atmosphere whatsoever, and you just feel like you're uncomfortable. And then you go to church, and you know, you don't even feel right there because you know that you're compromising, so you feel convicted, and you go, man, you know what, I don't feel comfortable anywhere. And that's what happens to the compromiser. That's what someone that's, you know, trying to be cold and hot, is that they never fit in anywhere. The world doesn't accept them, and you don't feel right at church. And this is what God's telling them. He says, you know what, either you're going to choose me or you're going to choose Baal, but you better make a decision, man. Who are you going to serve? And so, Elijah, after he confronts them, he now begins to explain to them this challenge. Look at verse 22. And Elijah said to the people, I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, let them give us two bulls. Let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it in pieces, lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it, and it will prepare. I will prepare the other bull, lay it on the wood, put no fire under it. And you call in the name of your gods, and I will call in the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. So all the people answered and said, it is well spoken. And Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one bull for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many, and call the name of your God, put no fire under it. So they took the bull which was given them. They prepared it. They called the name of Baal from morning even till noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. And there was no voice. No one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they had made. And so it was at noon that Elijah mocked them. And he said, cry louder, for he's a god. Either he's meditating, or he's busy, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's sleeping and must be awakened. You gotta love Elijah, man. You know, he's just sitting there, he's just laughing at him. He's going, hey guys, hey, where's your God? I like how the Good News Translation puts that verse. He says, at noon, Elijah started making fun of them. Pray louder. He's a god. Maybe he's daydreaming, or maybe he's relieving himself. Or perhaps he's gone on a journey. That's the literal translation of that verse. Maybe he's sitting on the pot. You know what I mean? He needs help. Keep calling. And Elijah's sitting there mocking and laughing at these guys. Hey guys, where's your God? You know, come on. And now, watch this. Verse 28. So they cried loud and cut themselves, as was their custom, with knives and lances until the blood gushed out of them. Now these guys were sincere, man. They sincerely believed that their God was going to answer them. But you know what? You can be sincere and you can be sincerely wrong. And that's what these guys were, man. They were sincere. Can you imagine? I mean, they're dancing around. Hey, Baal! Oh, Baal! They're cutting themselves and bloody, you know, all over the place. And they're still going, oh, Baal! And Elijah's going, you guys are nuts. And you realize that you know, not only did Baal not answer, but Baal had no power. He had no ability to deliver them. He had no ability to satisfy them. He had no power in order to bring, you know, an answer to prayer. And so watch what happens. And when midday was past, they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, and there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid attention. These guys are, you know, standing there, kept going and kept going and kept going. And now, you know, can you imagine all from morning and all the way past noon, and now it's already the evening sacrifice. And now Elijah comes in and he says, okay, guys, my turn. Let me show you what God can do. Well, look at verse 30. And Elijah said to all the people, come near to me. And all the people came near to him and repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the son of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, Israel shall be your name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. He made a trench around the altar large enough to hold 2 sieves of seed. And he put the wood in order. He cut the bull in pieces. He laid it on the wood and said, fill 4 water pots with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. And he said, do it again, second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. So the water ran all around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. Can you imagine? I mean, you're talking, you know, you're looking for a burnt offering. You're looking for God to send fire down from heaven. He says, hey, I'll tell you what, guys, go get some buckets of water and overflow the altar. Put water on the wood. Let's build a trench. We'll put water in the trench. And he says, let me show you whose God is powerful. And so they pour all this water. They keep bringing buckets. All the trench is filled up. The sacrifice is soaking wet. The wood is soaking wet. And then watch this. Verse 36, and it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and he said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel and I am your servant. Look at this, guys, and I think this is key to this chapter. Watch what he says. And that I have done these things at your word. Hear me, O Lord. Hear me, that this people may know that you are the Lord God and that you have turned their hearts back to you again. Notice the heart of God. He says, God, I pray not for my sake, but so that the people would know that you're God. And so that their hearts would once again be turned back to you. Now remember, as we started this whole chapter, I told you that the reason the drought had come was so that God can get their attention. And I think sometimes in our lives, man, we go through droughts, we go through dry periods, man, especially when you're not walking in obedience to God. And there's those times where you really think, you know, did God forsake me or what's going on in my life? And at the time where God's saying, you know what, I'm seeking for you to be right with me. Because God loves you. And God wants you to be right with Him. God will even pursue you. He will allow things to happen in your life so that you will turn to Him. And I know that in my own life, you know, it took things that, you know, what I thought were tragedies in order for God to get my attention. It was cool, you know, when I came back, and I landed on Sunday in LAX, and I was able to have the opportunity to spend the day with one of my friends that I grew up with in high school. And I shared with him the gospel, man, over and over. He went to retreat with me. We were in Palm Springs, you know, about maybe 300 miles from LA where we live. And I took him with me, and he was having all kinds of problems, drugs and everything. And I took him to this retreat. And on Friday night, man, the first night of the retreat, man, God was speaking to his heart. Big time. And you know, he says, man, I don't know, I feel uncomfortable, man. I know that if I give my life to the Lord, I'm not going to have any more fun, and it's going to be boring. And, you know, it's going to be... And so, you know, he ended up leaving. He took off. And he went back to his old life, man. And here it is, you know, almost 20 years later. And he called me up as he was in jail. And he says, you know what, Ray? I finally understand what you were telling me, man. And I gave my life to Jesus Christ. And it was cool because as I went out there, he's gonna come out and spend some time with us over here. He has to get his transfer and everything in a couple of months. And he says, you know what, man? I want to live my life for the kingdom of God from now on. And you realize, you know what? It took drastic things for God to get his attention. But let me tell you something, man. God will go to any measures in order to get your attention because he loves you so much. And he would rather you be uncomfortable and you not have to deal with situations, because then maybe if you're on your back, you'll finally look up, man. You'll say, God, I give. And I've seen it, man, over and over. You know, that God will have to bring a person to the end of his own ropes, man, so that God can begin to work in his life. You know, how many people come to the Lord as a result of some tragedy, or maybe a marriage that's going to end, or, you know, some situation in your life where you finally realize, you know what, in order, man, I need God in my life. And God will allow those things. And I think that's what he's doing here. He says, you know what, God, that they may know that you're God and that they will turn their hearts back to you again. Because that's the heart of God, man. He loves you so much that he will allow things to happen so you can get your attention. You know what's incredible? Is we were there, you know, in Thailand this last week. And never before has the door been opened to the gospel in Thailand. And I'll tell you right now, man, there are so many doors open for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And what did it take in order for that to happen? It took a major tragedy, man. You just go, you realize, you know what? Maybe God was allowing this because he's trying to get their attention. Maybe God wanted an opportunity in order to get in, you know, into that country, not only Thailand, but, you know, all these other countries, man, that are grieving. And the only people that have answers is Jesus Christ and the Christians that are bringing the hope of Jesus Christ. And so you realize, you know what, man, you know what? God will allow things to happen because he loves them, not because he hates them. He'll allow things to happen because he would rather see you in heaven than to see you content in this earth and end up in the pit of hell for the rest of your life. You see, that's what's amazing to me. So watch what happens. Verse 38 now. It says, and the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice, the wood and the stones and the dust. And it licked up the water that was in the trenches. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, he's God. The Lord, he is God. Can you imagine? They're all sitting around. There's this sacrifice, this altar. There's this bull with the meat all chopped up for the sacrifice. It's soaking wet, trenches with water all around it. And it says that the fire came down and it consumed the altar. It consumed all of the water. It consumed all the wood. And they're standing there. There's nothing but an ash heap. And they're going, okay, it's the Lord. He's God. You know, look what it took for God to get their attention. Fire coming down from heaven, man, consuming the sacrifice. And the people go, okay, you're right, Elijah. We're wrong. You see, what's it going to take, man, for God to get your attention? What's it going to take for him, for you to finally say, okay, God, you know what? You're God, and I want to serve you with all my heart. You know what? It's easier just to say before the tragedies come and before the difficulties of life come, just to say, God, you know what? I want to serve you with all my heart. Because you don't have to go through all that. Not that you won't have trials, not that you won't have tribulations, but you see, in all of it, man, God is accomplishing his purposes in your life, man. And you see what's happening here? They finally surrender. Watch this, verse 40. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. They seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook of Kishon, and they executed them there. Elijah killed 450 prophets of Baal. You think, man, Elijah must be, you know, a ninja or something. You know, wipes out 450. Now, think about it. They're all bleeding. They're all from their sacrifice. They're barely making it over there. And Elijah comes and he wipes out 450 of them. And you know what? They realize, you know what? We've been wrong and God is right. You know, what else can you say, man? When you finally come to the end of yourself, and when you've been living your life for this world, you've been living your life for yourself, and then you finally realize, you know what? I've been on the wrong track this whole time, on the wrong course. You can only say, you know what? God's right and I'm wrong. And I need to line my life up with what God says so that, man, that I've made the decision, man, to seek Him and to put Him first. Understand this, guys. We have a choice. Every one of us. As Joshua told them, choose this day whom you're going to serve, man. As Elijah was there and he said, hey, if you're going to serve Baal, go serve Baal. But if you're going to serve the Lord, serve the Lord. But you know what? Stop faltering. Stop, you know, going between both opinions. You have to make a decision. And if you're going to serve this world, then you know what? Go for it. No one can stop you. You have to choose, man. I'm going to serve the Lord or am I going to serve this world? But don't play games with God. Don't sit there and falter between two opinions, because I'll tell you one thing for sure, man. You might make that decision, but know this beyond a shadow of a doubt, that no woman's going to satisfy you. No man's going to bring satisfaction to you. Pornography's not going to satisfy you. Drugs and alcohol never satisfy you. Accumulating possessions and money ain't going to satisfy you. The only thing that's going to satisfy you, man, is Jesus Christ. That's it. Nothing else will bring contentment in your life. And you have a choice. You can choose any of those things. You can choose your own path. But you will never be satisfied within, because it's only Jesus Christ who can bring that satisfaction. He's the living water that never goes dry. And so all of these things take place, man. Execute all of them. And then verse 41, real quick, watch what happens. Then Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there's the sound of the abundance of rain. So Ahab went up to eat and drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he bowed down on the ground, and he put his face between his knees, and he said to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked at and said, there's nothing. And seven times he said, go again. And it came to pass the seventh time that he said, there is a cloud as small as a man's hand rising out of the sea. So he said, go up, say to Ahab, prepare yourself, prepare your chariot and go down before the rain stops you. Man, I love Elijah, because you see, you know what you see? You see a man of faith. He knew that God said there was going to be rain, man. God sent him on a mission. He said, you know what? I'm going to send rain upon the earth. And so what happens? Elijah begins to pray. He begins to cry out for God to intervene. Now, we're going to Israel in a month from now. And one of the things, we'll go up to Mount Carmel and you'll see exactly where Elijah was, or the area where Elijah was on Mount Carmel. Because you're on one side of the mountain, and then as you climb up a little bit of the hill, you can see the ocean right on the other side. And so Elijah's there praying. He says, hey, go check and see if there's a cloud coming yet. And so his servant runs up. He looks, he runs back and says, Elijah, there's nothing. And so Elijah, go check again. You know, runs up, comes back, and Elijah's praying the whole time. He goes, hey, there's still nothing. Seven times, you know, back and forth, back and forth. And the seventh time he goes, hey, there's a little tiny cloud. It's about that big. Elijah says, that's it, man. The Lord's bringing rain. You know, you got to love Elijah, man. What a man of faith. But there's something we can learn from this, because it tells us, watch, turn to the book of James. Watch real quick. Look at verse 17. He says, Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. And he prayed earnestly that would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its fruit. You know what's incredible? Is that the scripture makes note, it goes out of its way to mention that, you know what, Elijah was just like us. He's a man just like us, same nature as me and you have. And what's really amazing to me is that, you know, when I think of Elijah, or I think of Paul, the apostle, I think of these great men of God, I go, oh man, those guys had faith. And he said, you know what? He was just like us. But he, the only thing different, man, is that he was willing to take God at His word. And how many of us are willing to take God at His word? Hey, when God says something, it's going to come to pass. God's word is true. And so Elijah, he goes and he tells Ahab, you better hurry up, man. It's going to rain. Can you imagine? And then so watch this. Look at verse 45. And it happened in the meantime that the sky became black with clouds and wind, and there was a heavy rain. So Ahab rode away and he went to Jezreel. Then the hand of the Lord came upon Elijah, and he girded up his loins and ran ahead of Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. Can you imagine? Can you get the picture? It's pouring rain. Ahab's in his chariots, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, Ahab gets to the gate and he's kind of waiting for him. Hey, Ahab, what's going on? The Lord picked him up. He put him in front of the gate. You know, and he's probably, you know, just kind of, what took you so long, buddy? And you see, you know, the hand of God. God's guidance, God's wisdom, God's direction, God performing the impossible. You see, one of the things, you know, when we were out there this week and out, and we're out in the middle of the, you know, we're kind of seeing all the devastation and just walking up down the coast, and you go, you know what, God, you can do something incredible in this land if you want to. And that you would give us the faith, man, as a church, as you know, as a group of churches, that we'd be willing to take any steps and any doors that you open, that we'd be willing to do whatever you want to do. Because you know what? There's nothing impossible for God, guys. God can use this tragedy to touch Thailand, to touch, you know, India. He can use this tragedy to touch Indonesia. I mean, you don't know what God's planning. And how many of us are really willing to say, God, whatever you want, man, that's what I want. Whether it's in your life here, or whether, you know, it's in your family, or whether it's among your friends, or whatever it is, man, that you're willing to say, God, I know that you have a plan, and I want to be part of your plan. I want to see you work. And I know that there's nothing impossible for you if I'm willing to make you my God, my Lord, my Master. Willing to obey you with all my heart. You see, God is looking to touch lives, man. He's looking to do an incredible work. All He's looking for is a willing servant. Someone that's willing to take Him at His word. Someone who's willing to trust Him in the midst of our trials and our tribulations.